Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guests today are Catherine Powers and Jake Brown. Jake co-wrote the memoir of the Spree of 83, The Life and Times of Freddie Powers. And Catherine Powers is the widow of the late country music star Freddie Powers, the subject of the memoir. Catherine and Jake, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Well, if someone listening isn't familiar with Freddie Powers, can you describe his impact on country music and his success as a musician?
Sure.
I'm going to let Jake, you take it because you're always so good at this answer.
Well, it's that question is a probably like 5 or 6 part answer. So I'll try to condense it because Freddie's influence was so widespread and rich in depth. You don't have the video on, so I'm just going to read you some of this. A freewheeling, often poignant oral history of one of the unsung heroes of country music, Rolling Stone magazine. Freddie's demonstrated a dedication to broadening the parameters of country and Western, particularly in creating fusion in the country honky-tonk and swing jazz. This interest runs throughout his career, country music television. Powers' name stands among some of the country music's most enduring classics, the Austin Chronicle. It goes down the list here. Those are critical accolades. And on the back of the book, The Spree of 83, The Life and Times of Freddie Powers, there's a long list of people that continue to sing his praises. And they all come from different walks of life that Freddie and their paths crossed in, and that a life-changing difference was made, career-changing difference, et cetera. If you go back to the fact that American Songwriter magazine, who I like to plug because I'm a big fan, and they are the premier country music's kind of little more esteemed area of review and assessment of careers, wrote a beautiful, beautiful cover story for us in which they properly acknowledge, as we have been pushing for years, Freddie should be and is credited now with really being the first artist to usher Dixieland jazz into country music's mainstream. And why that is significant in and of itself is if you listen to turnarounds in certain rural songs or any other of the little reverberations of that style as it worked its way into the artists that he collaborated with, Big and Rich talk about it in the book quite profoundly. There's the Freddie Powers chords he's known from Texas along the same lines that came out of that style that he brought in. And then on top of that, if you look at him as a songwriter, you know, you're talking about Natural High and Let's Get Lucky, Let's Chase Each Other Around the Room Tonight and Always Get Lucky With You and Little Hotel Room and all of these amazing songs that were recorded and made hits by Merle Haggard and George Jones and Ray Charles and beyond. And then you go into the arena of who he was behind the scenes, which is equally as important. I like to joke, Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard could hang out with anybody. They could have picked anybody to spend hours and hours at a time every day for years with. And in Merle and Freddie's case, especially, these guys were like brothers like that. Freddie made an impression that became instantly permanent, I think, on everyone he met, whether it was personally, musically, and I'm included myself in that. I've been doing this 20 years this year, actually. And of a lot of the famed this, that, rock bands, rap stars, you could name it. Freddie's by far one of the top, along with Joe Satriani and Anna Nancy Wilson, probably just high career highlight for me and one of the most pleasurable people and Catherine to work with because he's just such a charmer and everyone loved him like that. He was infectious. And to add one other thing, Freddie as a visionary, really, really had some unique things in his catalog that others don't have. He had a television show called Rodgers and Hammerhead that I believe was one of the first cable television shows that was hosted by songwriters focusing on songwriters. He had a Parkinson's cruise once his Parkinson's adventure began. This guy was fearless. He stayed in the spotlight his whole life because people wanted him there.
And so what is the Spree of 83 reference in the title of the memoir?
Catherine, you want to take that one?
Yeah. When Freddie and Merle got together and started working together, that was actually in 1979. And when Freddie moved up on the houseboats with next to Merle. And that time period went all the way through to even the 2000s. But that Spree of 83, living on those houseboats, had a span of 79 to about 89. And it was their party time and their songwriting time. And they just, and Merle always called it the Spree of 83. And so that's how that title came about, and we stuck with it.
Yeah. Also importantly, the reason that he called it the Spree of 83 is that during this wildly prolific songwriting period that began, you know, Freddie was 50 and Merle a little older, but not much when they met, I think 51. These guys were basically.
Freddie was older.
Okay. But they were within range of each other in age, and they were both newly divorced. Merle was worth tens of millions of dollars. And he basically, within Freddie, he found a new generation of songwriting partner. And that is hugely important to note because Freddie had an impact on the kind of songs Merle chose. Again, these guys can hang out with anyone. They can write songs with anyone. It speaks to Freddie's importance in country music that he was picked by Merle to become not just his right-hand man, but his best friend. They lived next to one another on houseboats on Lake Shasta. They would party all night and write all night and had all kinds of, I mean, these guys rivaled any rock star I've ever written a book with in terms of the fun they had. But at the same time, they were writing number one song after number one song. So the Spree of 83 became kind of a catchphrase for this output of songs they were banging out whilst having as much fun as they were having.
And how did he originally meet Merle and begin collaborating?
Catherine can tell you that one.
Well, actually, Freddie and Merle met the first time was back in 1961. And they were both playing in Las Vegas. Freddie was playing at the Showboat, and Merle was playing at Harrah's, I believe. And Merle came over to watch one of Freddie's shows. And from that moment on, they just became friends. For the next 13 days, they would take turns going back and forth, seeing each other's shows and hanging out together. And then at the end of that 13 days, it was like Merle went his way and Freddie went his way. And they would hear a little bit about each other, but they didn't stay in contact at that time. It wasn't until, I believe it was in 78, the end of 78, first 79, that Willie Nelson, which Freddie had been friends with Willie since the 50s, had invited Freddie over to hang out with him. And Merle Haggard showed up. And when he walked in the room, the first thing Merle said to Freddie when Willie was introducing him is that he liked what Freddie had done on the Willie Nelson album, which Freddie had produced with Willie and Paul Buskirk, Over the Rainbow album. And they ended up picking all night. And I mean, seriously, picking all night and all the next day until Willie realized it was time to go back to work. And they all went back to work. And then after they got off, they went right back to Willie's room, started picking again. And next thing you know, Freddie and Merle was either Freddie was going up to Redding, California to pick and hang out with Merle, or Merle was coming down to Reno and to do the same thing with Freddie, until Merle finally had asked Freddie to, he said, why don't you move up to Lake Shasta and buy a houseboat and live next door to me? And Freddie looked at him and he said, Merle, I don't make the kind of money that you make. And Merle said, money's not a problem, not the issue. So Merle went out and bought Freddie an $85,000 houseboat and had it parked right next to him. And the Spree of 83 began.
Yeah. And from that point, another thing that's important to know, when she talks about picking, what is just a shorthand in country music and music we know, in case your audience members might not, picking means playing acoustic guitar together in a really intense manner of competition and fun, where Freddie would, in fact, there's a really cool video we have up on the YouTube channel for the Spree of 83 book of an Austin City Limits that Freddie headlined and his guests included Merle and Willie. And it's pretty historic because you can sit there and watch Freddie, then you can watch Merle, and then you can watch Willie. What about this? And these guys are going back and forth in these incredible noodling sessions, but they would within these picking sessions, it also reflected the depth of their knowledge and Freddie's knowledge in particular of song. This guy was a walking songbook. And because he was a live performer for decades, he had to play audience sets of everything from country standards to Dixieland jazz standards, to his own originals, to vaudeville, to you name it. So one of the things that in the interviews I did with a lot of people for the book that Catherine set me up to talk to, is they would often talk about what a songbook Freddie was. That's also why when he became more involved over the 80s with Merle's band, The Strangers, from a musical standpoint, because Merle found him such a unique guitar player. There's a lot of influence that behind the scenes and filtering into the music goes on there as well, in terms of just the subtle nudges Freddie could give when he was playing guitar. He had these Freddie Powers chords that are now standard in Texas history of guitar history. Freddie Powers has his own chords. In fact, Frank Lydell, Miranda Lambert's producer, in his interview for the book, went on and on about them. So it illustrates just that when they were picking, they were playing, but it wasn't like they were just playing GCD. These guys were playing like inverted. Freddie knew so many chords that no one else knew. Rattlesnake Annie talks elaborately in the book, another Texas legend, about learning the Freddie chords. And we actually deconstruct them for fans through his band members and through a lot of players. So you could really, for the first time, get an inside look at how many musical genres and how many songbooks this guy knew. So that also made a huge influence on how he could go anywhere Merle wanted to on the page. If Merle wanted to write about, you know, I mean, Catherine could tell you, these guys have an incredibly prolific catalog they wrote together. How many songs is it Catherine wrote versus recorded? It's a lot. Like 200 songs, right? They wrote together.
Yeah, they wrote, God, hundreds of songs together, but 41 of them made actual album cuts, with six of them being number ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was just with Merle.
That was just with Merle. Ray Charles recorded a Little Hotel Room. George Jones, Catherine points out, had his last number one with a song of Freddie's. Merle Haggard had a new generation of number ones, and that's not taking anything away because Merle co-wrote all of them except for Natural High. But there was a new life that Freddie's music breathed into a lot of. It's similar to the White Willie, and I joke about this too. Like, we talk about Freddie and Willie. Willie could have hung out with anybody. You know, Freddie in the 90s and 2000s, their friendship was a 50-year friendship. They lived on the same golf course. Willie would come hang out with Freddie a lot and just pick and play and whatnot. But Willie could ask anyone to produce that Over the Rainbow record, which went on to win a Grammy and really kind of, I mean, these are not insignificant second B-side songs. These are A-list songs that these artists trusted Freddie enough with his creative talents to really make him an integral part of that process. And like I say, it's something that these songs have stood the test of time too. They're still recorded, and more importantly, performed today. They're not only performed by stars, but they're performed across Texas and other areas within country music territory by up and coming artists, because the audience wants to hear them. And because they're so complicated to play in good ways that you become better musicians by covering them. So Freddie's ability to reverberate his influence was also really something we want to make sure is noted in this book, because it was profound.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, in addition to obviously his musical legacy, Freddie was diagnosed with Parkinson's. How did he deal with that diagnosis and illness and maintain as a performer?
Bravely.
Very bravely and a lot of positivity. When he was first diagnosed with Parkinson's, it was something that neither one of us knew anything about. And of course, thank you for the internet that I was able to learn a lot more about it. And at first, it really didn't seem to be an issue for him. But when he started losing his ability to play guitar, now there is when things kind of changed. He had fallen into a little depression, and I basically had to give him an ultimatum, either get up and live with me or I was out of there. But it was an evening with Merle Haggard that we'd gone up to Merle's for Thanksgiving, and it was an Agatha Christie party. And after dinner and everything, they were sitting around playing the guitars, and Freddie was trying his best, and he was struggling to keep up. And he had just turned, you know, he was emotional, and he turned to Merle and said, "Merle, I just can't play anymore. I don't know what I'm going to do." And Merle spoke up and said, "Freddie, you can still sing and you can still tell your jokes." And that turned everything around for Freddie right then. And after that, we stayed on the road. We kept him busy. He's continued to perform, coming up until he lost his ability to even speak, but he stayed positive and he worked as hard as he could to enjoy living. It wasn't just quantity. He had a great quality.
Yeah. And Catherine will not give herself credit for it, so I'll go ahead. But basically, Catherine, behind the scenes, there was an incredible machinery that helped propel Freddie's will to live to the fullest, because this guy, right at the advent of the internet, social media's very first generation, Catherine was able to just really create a whole new awareness, not only of his Parkinson's, but that, hey, I'm going to be in, you know, he got started getting inducted into all these halls of fame. Well, they would make sure he got there. And whether it was Willie Nelson helping to sort of pay off bills that she accrued as far as the Parkinson's, you know, the costs of the disease, or gas cards that, you know, Big and Rich sent them, or other things she can talk about. There was a behind the scenes network of stars that helped keep Freddie on the road and on stage performing, because there were always audiences that wanted to come see him. And this includes going to France twice in 2008 and 10 for the Echo Blues Festival with full band and everything, and getting standing ovations, and includes doing Willie Nelson's 4th of July picnic in front of 10,000 people, Big and Rich. So he had this mechanism behind the scenes that it made Freddie proud, because he was the guy back in the earlier days doing that for other people. You know what I mean? If Merle didn't want to go on stage and play a show, Freddie was the designated guy they picked to go on the bus and talk him into it. If it was, and Catherine, what did you say he used to do to get him up?
There would be times when Merle would be saying, you know, he was tired and he just didn't want to go out and do the show. And Freddie would walk in the bus and he would rattle off Merle's prison number and tell him to hit the floor. And Merle would jump up and they'd go out and do the show.
Yeah. The Silver Eagle song captures their life on the road. And Freddie writes it from the perspective, quite brilliantly, I'd add, of Freddie writes it from the perspective of watching Merle being a star, trapped quite literally at times within that stardom. He couldn't get off the bus because 1,000 people would ensconce him and he couldn't even get a, you know what I mean? Or couldn't go to the bathroom or whatever have you. And then the other thing that's really notable too, in that question you ask, is when Freddie's Parkinson's started, and especially after Catherine got him back on his feet, she played this incredible behind the scenes role. I witnessed it personally for years. It ranged from medical, from changing his stomach too while she's on the phone with John Ridge talking about a Big and Rich show Freddie's going to come make an appearance at, or a great Hall of Fame that she's got to get him to that's in Texas and they're in Nashville, or a nurse that's got to come. They put a hospital bed at the front of his tour bus. That's how literally on the road they kept him. And you would see Freddie too be visited wherever he went by all these different people, whether they were famous country stars or just fans. You would, you know, the community of people that also rallied through social media, that she was able to say, okay, we're going to be in blah city in blank time. And, you know, you'd show up and there'd be people waiting on the bus. How can we help? Can we help Kim carry him off the bus, even to get him in and off of his wheelchair? So once people saw Freddie wanted to fight, and that he then became really one of the more notable celebrities with Parkinson's over the last 20 years to stay visible and stay inspiring people. And she played just a huge role in, from manager to nurse, to tour bus driver, to booking agent. Catherine did a huge amount of behind the scenes work. And then also very visibly by his side, that part of their love stories, they're known, it's not, one of them is not mentioned without the other. When Freddie had his picking parties, if people were talking, it's called the Coach Royal Rules. You'd be quiet when good songwriters are playing. Catherine would go around, and it didn't matter if she was kicking the boot of George Strait or whether she was kicking the boot of an unknown country singer who was just excited to be there. She really kept the line as far as the type of standards that Freddie would have himself had he been able to once the Parkinson's. They were an amazing team. It was really something to watch.
Well, in addition to someone buying this memoir to learn more about Freddie, are there any other resources that you would recommend? Any Spotify playlist, or you mentioned a YouTube channel?
Yeah, we've got. That's to interrupt you. You can recut later on that question, so I'm not cutting you up. But we're excited. We have one of the first of its kind book soundtracks, country music memoir book soundtrack. It's 2 CDs, 52 songs. We curated it, Catherine and I together, which was quite a privilege, because we got to go back. She took care of more of the studio side and left the live to me with her input and approval, of course. But we really wanted to show the diversity. So you get Freddie in the 50s when he was first doing his 12, you know, what do they call those back then? 12 inch or six inch, the record size.
Yeah.
45s.
The 45s. Yeah, you get 45s from the 50s. You go into the 70s and you get, we have two live albums, Live in Reno and Live in Vegas 75. And to make note of this, Freddie was one of the most celebrated and successful Reno and Nevada touring acts of that decade. And that's a hard, everyone was trying to get those stage spots. Freddie had a house spot at the El Dorado. He was the master of goodwill. He had a penthouse suite at the top of the place. He drove a new Caddy every year. He won 1978 Act of the Year. So it just shows you, and that's just one area of his career, but you can hear that music while you read along. There's also within the soundtrack, we've got excerpts from the songwriting show, Rodgers and Hammerhead, where you get to hear legends like Floyd Tillman and that Freddie really, really championed. You get to hear him live in his own sets from those vaudeville and those lounge acts where you hear his comedy. You hear his Dixieland jazz playing. The level of musicianship will blow you away. You hear him when he had Parkinson's. You hear him singing with Merle Haggard. You hear Willie Nelson on there. You hear everyone that you might have known to come and love him through is involved in this. Willie talked to us on Christmas Day for the book. Merle gave us 3 hours right before a Country Hall of Fame, Music Hall of Fame thing he was doing. And you could just see all these different people really get emotionally affected to the point of tears because they love this man so much and they wanted to help keep his story move forward. So all of those, and we have a YouTube channel that's got a huge archive of videos on it. The Freddie Power, what is it? FreddiePowers.net?
Yes.
FreddiePowers.net's got a huge archive there. And if you order the book through the website, Catherine will personally sign it for you, your Christmas present or a birthday, or just for a fan you might know of Freddie's. We'll, the books can be signed personally. We're trying to, Freddie really, and there's a movie coming up next that we've already got a screenplay done for and had financing partly before COVID destroyed that. We had actors we kind of talked to about leads. I mean, this guy had such a colorful cinematic life that we really want to make sure it gets fully appreciated by as many people as can, because he's a hugely important figure in country music.
That's great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Catherine Powers and Jake Brown, co-authors of the memoir, The Spree of 83, The Life and Times of Freddie Powers. The memoir is on sale now, so go buy a copy, as they just mentioned. And Catherine and Jake, thanks for doing this interview.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.